The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Taylor Payne. Welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your happily postponed Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. I'm joined by two lovely chaps. George Corkin's back. Nice to have you back, George. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm tickety-boo, Taylor Payne. How are you?
I'm all right. How was stateside? Was it nice?
It was very good, Taylor Payne. Yeah, thanks very much for asking. I had a good time. I was there for Thanksgiving, saw the family.
Good.
Went to the Trailblazers. Win. They're a very Newcastle team, so that was good.
Excellent.
I, of course, missed you, Taylor Payne, and also Christopher Woff.
Right. Okay, hang on. What's going on?
What?
Why are you using my full Sunday name?
Well, I listened to both pods while I was away and enjoyed them tremendously, but one of the things that struck me was the fact that Christopher Woff uses everybody's full name whenever he mentions them over a course of a podcast. So having said, well, yes, in Eddie Howe's press conference on Friday, he referenced Bruno playing as the number six, number eight, number whatever. And then Eddie Howe said again, he does it all the time. He can't bring himself to say Howe or Bruno. He won't use first names. We know that. He's got an allergy to first names, but he won't say Guimaraes either. It has to be Bruno Guimaraes. It just struck me. So I just thought, well, that's obviously the house style of the pod.
Is that what we're doing now, is it? Is that where we are?
I think so, yeah, Taylor Payne, I think we are, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that, George Corkin. We've got Chris Woff here. Christopher Woff, how are you?
Well, I'm a bit concerned for George's welfare because he only seems to be sitting wearing a hoodie, whereas he turned up at St. James's Park last night once more with multiple jackets and coats. He had what he described as an indoor coat, and then he also had another coat to put on outside.
Was he wearing a smoking jacket, by any chance?
I had a shacket.
Nice.
Shirt, jacket,
yeah,
and on top
that.
Of that, I had a heavy coat. Chris turned up, wearing a child-sized jumper, which I'll just say accentuated his body, and also everything he wears is either turquoise or aquamarine, which are the two colours that are always 10% off in shops,
Makes sense. Time
of year you go to. He's in no position to lecture me about what I wear or how I wear it.
You just like to be ready for any occasion, George, don't you? Whatever presents itself,
whatever freezing weather. I'm always freezing
these
days. It is scandalous. It's a betrayal of my own tradition, and I'm very sorry. I apologize
well,
to everybody.
Well, your apology should be extended because it should be extended to the entire Newcastle United family. It should be extended to Eddie Howe and to every single one of the Newcastle United players, both of their names, because during the match yesterday, he sat and... First of all, during the first half, he said, Mo Salah hasn't really done anything this game, has he? He's been very quiet.
Good, yeah.
And then he also, when Newcastle were leading 2-1, prematurely started writing about it being a wonderful, famous night for Newcastle United, when I'd specifically told him not to.
Brilliant.
So it was his fault.
Yeah, I caught myself. I caught myself on, yeah. Yeah.
Never learn, do you, George? Never learn.
No.
Well, how many years have you been doing this now with Newcastle?
Oh, 50, Come 60, on. I can't remember.
Easily 140 years, something
Newcastle
like that.
Newcastle United. Yeah.
Right then, let's move on. Two draws, 5 days apart, but separated by eons in terms of enjoyment and excitement. George, you haven't even had your say on West Ham yet, not that you necessarily want to, but talk about contrasting emotions in the past 7 days. Quite astonishing.
Yes, let's not linger on that too much. It's just to say that, so I did go to watch the West Ham game in a pub in Portland, Oregon. Have to say big hello and thanks to Joe and Will, the Portland Massive, I should say, the Portland NUFC Massive. For sorting us out at the Independent Sports Bar in downtown Portland. And it was great to see them and chat all things Newcastle. Loved that. Went there with my family too. But it was weird. As we arrived at this bar, which is in the middle of like downtown Portland, hadn't been there before, we parked like right outside. And Henry, my dad, basically said, oh, yeah, it's amazing. That's just all gone swimmingly, hasn't it, so far? And it's that thought struck me. What can possibly go wrong? Answer, Newcastle United.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'd not like thought about for a while, but I hate that feeling, that West Ham feeling that we all had. I know you talked about it, that feeling that we're going to win.
Yeah.
I hate having that feeling. I hate having that feeling as a Newcastle fan. I love having that feeling that we had last night where you're the underdogs. You've got that attitude, you're going to fight for everything. The team played like they expected to win. we'll come on to talk about this a bit later on, this whole thing about attitude and body language and things like that. I don't need to add much more about that, but there was such a contrast in certainly the second half against West Ham and the whole of the game against Liverpool, which was brilliant. And Newcastle have got to find a way to treat all games in the same way. That's that's what separates the good teams from the very, very best teams. And we've seen that absolutely writ large last night.
Yeah, we don't seem to have a problem getting up for the big games, do we? Let's talk about Callum Wilson. Programme notes, Chris. Slightly spiky. Let's read them through. I know when I'm fit, I'll score goals. Football is fickle. True people, like the manager, remember. But some people forget what happened a few weeks ago, let alone in previous seasons.
Yeah, I mean, it's spiky, but actually, I quite like it in the sense that... That's how he motivates himself. We know that he's someone who sort of he can be quite spiky in interviews. He is someone who has a lot of self-confidence. And I think that he has that partly because he has to build himself back up. Now, within his program notes, there were also some, I suppose I'll use the term Callum Wilsonisms, and I will use both names. He refers to getting knocked down 10 times, which just means you have to get back up 11 times. He also said that the team who's most consistent over 38 games will win the Premier League, which, you know, fair. You can't really argue with that.
No.
But Newcastle do want a fit Callum Wilson, and what a huge asset he would be if they can keep him fit for any period of time, because he is right in a sense that people do forget to a certain degree, because people get so frustrated when he's out injured, because he is out injured a heck of a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But when he's fit and available, his goal scoring record is phenomenal. And when you've got him and Isak fighting, pushing one another, I actually think that at least a tiny part of Alexander Isak's performance against Liverpool would have come from the fact that Callum Wilson is back and is theoretically in the next couple of weeks going to be, if he can stay fit, someone who could start matches. And Isak has to raise his level again as well. So yes, it is spiky, but I think it's also that sort of attitude where he is someone who has delivered in the past when he's fit and available. And so I quite like that actually, despite it being a bit spiky.
100 Premier League appearances up for both Bruno Guimaraes and Dan Byrne. We have to mention Bruno winning the toss as well for the first time as Newcastle captain. And we have to mention Dan Byrne celebrating that fact, George. It was quite wonderful.
Very funny, kind of reminiscent of when he ran onto the pitch when Mark Gillespie, you know, made the saves in that,
post-season
game, and, you know, treating it as if he'd won the Champions League. Dan Byrne, here we are, a minute or so before kickoff, just before they do the huddle, and he's like shaking both fists at Bruno after winning the coin toss. But I mean, there was like a cheer in the crowd when Bruno finally won it, and it was great. For the first time for what feels like forever, they weren't turned round, and Newcastle started brilliantly. Yeah. And we have to mention both of those players. For Dan Byrne, you know, that's 100 Premier League appearances more than he ever expected to play for his hometown 100%. Team. When we talk about attitude and commitment and demeanour and body language, it's not something we ever think about in terms of him. He plays every game as if it was his first game, as every game as if it was his last game. I thought he was excellent against last night, against a tricky opponent in Darwin Nunes. They were fighting with each other, wrestling with each other all the way through the match. And I thought he was excellent, but it's just a brilliant story. Dan Byrne's story is just a great, great modern Newcastle United story. Coming to the club post takeover, wasn't expected by people within the club to still be here at this point, but he is, and he's thriving. And whenever a challenge is put in front of him, whenever he's written off, whenever he said, okay, that's now time for somebody else to stay in the team, he raises levels and proves himself all over again. He's just a wonderful player. And of course, so is Bruno in a very different sense. In a funny way, perhaps we didn't expect Bruno to be here this long in a different way. He is. And, you know, obviously made a real impact in an attacking sense last night. So well done to them, both pivotal figures. And, you know, hopefully they're both here for some time to come. We'll see.
Absolutely. And we've got to mention Joe Linton and Fabian Scherer as well, past 200 games for those two guys recently as well. Another excellent milestone for that pair. Chris, Jacob Murphy, we came in for Joe Willock. Some interesting comments on X when the team was announced.
Yes, there was some interesting comments in the press room when the team was announced as well in terms of confirmation. It was a surprise. It was not the changes that anyone necessarily thought. And I do think a penny for Harvey Barnes' thoughts that he was overlooked again for Jacob Murphy to come back. Now, Jacob Murphy has had a couple of injuries recently, a hamstring one, and this was his first start since against Brighton in October. But Howe does tend to turn to Murphy quite often against the big sides. I think that he likes
to trust him.
Yeah, he trusts him defensively, and you saw that early on when he did track Darwin Nunez all the way back to make sure that the ball went out for a goal kick. He does provide that additional cover down that side. He does lead the press, or follow the press, sorry, but also he presses more than one person. He will cover the ground where Isak is, but then will sprint back to his other position if the ball's lost. And also, he provides pace in behind, and he did get in, obviously got that shot across goal, hit the post. Howe does like him on these sorts of occasions, but I did understand the frustration, and again, that says maybe something about where Newcastle United actually are as a club. More than 3 years after the takeover, that Jacob Murphy is still starting matches against the Premier League leaders at St James's Park.
Yeah.
That probably says that the squad evolution hasn't been quite what anyone anticipated it could or possibly even should have been. But speaking to him afterwards, he very rarely does interviews, but he's brought out by the club and to speak. And towards the end of it, he was basically asked about, do you see Mo Salah scoring these goals? Do you like base yourself? Do you watch these players? And he said, oh, I watch Mo Salah, or I watch Sadio Mane, I've watched all these players. And then he sort of stopped and very self-deprecating and just went, I probably haven't absorbed much of it. But he was he is that sort of cheeky chappy. He's someone who all his teammates really respect and get along with, and he is now part of the leadership group, and so I thought he did deliver alongside every other Newcastle player last night. So I was sceptical when he was named in starting 11, but I also see exactly what he can bring and what he did bring.
Yeah, I was in the press room when firstly, was the Newcastle United admin for X doing a bit of intentional trolling there by doing Jacob Murphy's face on the team sheet? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but like the responses, I was reading them out in the press room, and it was Murphy starts, let's just lose with dignity, ready to lose with Murphy. This is insanity, insane work. And it just kind of went on. Murphy starting, yeah, we've lost. If Murphy is the answer, what is the question? It's just it's another great lesson. It's a bit like that spell when Eddie Howe, sorry to use his full name, I've caught this disease, haven't I? Eddie Howe. When Howe decided that the best way to try and get results was he couldn't play Bruno and Tonali in the same team. Some idiot, by the way, who may or may not be on the podcast, wrote about that a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, the point is that you have to find a balance to the team.
Yeah.
And Murphy absolutely played his part in that performance last night, you know, referencing Dan Byrne and referencing Bruno. Oh God, I'm doing it. I'm naming all of their fucking, both of their names. It's so fucking annoying. I've put myself off there. I'm naming everyone's full names now. I don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's catching. It's really, really catching.
Let me try that again. You know, that Newcastle are in this kind of, still are in this transitional spell where then, you know, they're not an elite team. They're not an elite club, but they've got really good players and they've got a really good team. And it's just that object lesson in teams are built on balance. They're not built on names. And yeah, I thought Murphy more than played his part.
Not based on one name or both names or
whatever.
Very good. War flags, a lovely display before the game. Get into them, said the flag. And we got into them, didn't we, Chris? Pressing from the front and harrying Liverpool.
Yeah, so this was actually a last minute display, really, or last few days display, because the initial plan, and one that will eventually still happen, was a tribute to Kevin Keegan. The War Flags asked for donations for it, and all of the money that has been donated for that has gone towards that display, and it will happen at some stage. But the feeling was, after the last two performances and the last two results, that actually they needed something that was current rather than glorifying the past, and something to A, motivate the players, but B, also I think to basically send a rocket up them, and so get into them. Yeah, which was the new banner, but then also that they used a one they've used before, which is an Eddie Howe quote, which is, we're not here to be popular, we're here to compete, which has certainly been used with Newcastle and Liverpool in the past. And that did reflect exactly what we saw on the pitch. That was exactly what Newcastle were, certainly in the first half. From the very first minute, they were up and at Liverpool, the midfield three. I thought the way that they pressed, the way that they jumped together, they had triggers, and they went and nicked the ball off Gravenberch, they went and nicked the ball off McAllister. And then that led to opportunities. And within having not had a shot on target, having only had a shot blocked at Crystal Palace across the entire match on Saturday, within 2 minutes, Sandro Tonali's danced around the edge of the box and then forced a save from Kevin Kelleher. So that is the way that Newcastle started and the way that they continued. And that was what was really great to see, that it wasn't just it gave them an ump for a few minutes. It did actually die down for about 10 minutes the game after that. But Newcastle then found the way again, and then that momentum carried on throughout the rest of the, certainly the first half.
Yeah, I should say to maybe some of our audience who may be elsewhere or abroad or whatever, that the second that the get into them isn't just something that War Flag's made up.
Yeah.
It's part of a chant. It's part of a very old school chant. So I'm giving you a warning here that I'm about to use a bad word, but the second half of that phrase, get into them, fuck them up. We heard a bit of that in the second half from the Gallagate, and it's just. You know, it's not saying go out and hurt Liverpool, but it is that show that aggression. Now, Arnie Slot after the match, he talked about Newcastle's aggression in the first half. He wasn't complaining.
Yeah.
He said it in a very admiring sense that Liverpool couldn't live with it. You know, in fact, when you talk about aggression, there were moments Liverpool players on Newcastle players, maybe we'll talk about those, that they were fortunate to get away with. But Newcastle's attitude was aggressive. It was relentless. They didn't let up. It was just brilliant to see. And Chris is totally spot on. One of the great skills that War Flags have as this group is not only the incredible displays they do, the work that they put in to do it, it's about pivoting when they feel something needs to be said, a particular player needs a boost, or the manager needs a boost, or whatever, the club needs a boost. And yeah, it was just magnificent, and everybody responded.
It certainly did, and it can be an intimidating atmosphere, can't it, St James's Park, when it's feeling like that, Chris, when the lights are on, nighttime game against a big team, the atmosphere is a bit raucous and a bit spiky, and it wouldn't be Newcastle United against Liverpool without Jason Tindall telling the entire Liverpool bench to shut up and fuck off. He's very good at that, isn't he? He likes to do that against Liverpool.
Yeah, I think within 5 minutes of the match, the fourth official had been having quite strong words with Jason Tindall about getting back. It didn't seem to have any sort of effect whatsoever.
They should just have a word with him on his way out the tunnel. It would just like preempt it. You know, listen, Jason, I'm having a word with you now.
I mean, this continued all the way into injury time. That this was when Jason Tindall was still having a go at the Liverpool bench. Now, it's a different Liverpool bench to when Jurgen Klopp was there, and I don't think there's quite that animosity that there was previously, but there's still that feeling, I think, in Newcastle that this is a club that basically they owe several ones to, because they just can't beat them. And Tindall brought that, but you mentioned the atmosphere, and on a slot before the match, in what seemed to be a strange comment that he was being overly positive about Newcastle, but he basically said, this is a harder match in some ways than Real Madrid. And what he was saying there is partly because they were going away from home, but also they played Real Madrid and Manchester City in the last two matches. Both the psychological and physical energy that they've expended there to then come to Tyneside on a evening match when so much was riding on it, and then that pre-match atmosphere. Liverpool were rattled to a certain degree in that first half, both because of the atmosphere and because of the way Newcastle played. Liverpool couldn't get going.
Definitely.
When I was saying about the press, it wasn't just that Newcastle nicked possession quite often high up the pitch. It was also that you had, when McAllister was pressed at one stage, he ended up kicking the ball out of play, and you had other moments where Liverpool were playing sloppy passes, or you could see Gravenberch, who's received so much praise so far this season for having shifted into that number six role when Liverpool were looking for a number six previously. He struggled in that first half.
Yeah.
And it was an intimidating environment, and that's what Newcastle need to replicate more often, because they did it against Manchester City at times. They forced Manchester City in that position. Spurs, when they came, Arsenal, to a lesser degree, in a different sort of way, they also upset Arsenal in that sense. And they can do it, and they can elevate themselves to that level. And it shows how the special qualities of this side, that they are capable of doing that against elite players, against a side who have only lost once in all competitions all season.
And there were chances in that first half, George, from famine to feast, really, compared to the West Ham game and the Crystal Palace game. Newcastle were great in that first half.
Yeah, I mean, the Palace game is such a contrast. You know, you get through 90 minutes without a shot on target. Newcastle do that within a minute against, you know, the by far their best team in the Premier League this season. Chris and I wrote about this afterwards. They are such a weird team. They've been such a weird team this season. Now, You know, I talked about them. It's like they're a concussion. You know, that they've bounced from one thing to another. One, you just feel like you're about to get a sense of who they are and what they are, what the big themes are this season, and they become something else. I mean, like we've seen sort of bits of everything this season. You know, those decent results at the start, poor performances, some better performances, poor results. That stretch of, you know, that stretch where they beat Chelsea in the cup, they beat Arsenal, they beat Forest, and you think, okay, finally, like, we've got Newcastle United back. This is recognizable. This is who they are. And then after a break, after going to Saudi, they put in a performance like they did against West Ham and then followed it up against Palace. There isn't an excuse for that. Now, I think there are some themes this season about, you know, stylistically, the way they play against teams with a low block, as it's called these days, which in old school, old money is teams putting 11 men behind the ball. And there are also, there's a big theme about attitude, I think. And that's something that we'll come on to talk about. But yeah, they were absolutely the team that they can be and should be against Liverpool. And, you know, the challenge for everybody connected to the team now is to make sure that they build on that. Having said that, I'm going to put in a caveat. We thought that after Man City. We thought that after Arsenal. We thought that on several occasions this season, and it's not quite happened. But the challenge is there. The standards have been set.
Demented and fabulous at the same time. I loved it.
We have to talk about the goals, and in order to talk about a quite fantastic goal, I'm going to go over to our goals description correspondent, Mr. Chris Woff, with the play-by-play. Alexander Isak's thunderbolt, Chris.
Yeah, I think this might be possibly my favourite goal of 2024 so far from Newcastle perspective. I just like everything about it. I think it showed them at their best.
100%.
They'd actually gone forward with the ball. It gets lost and goes back to Fabian Scher, who'd played the initial long sort of crossfield ball. He then plays the ball in the midfield, and Bruno Guimaraes, who we've said was in this number 8 position, jinks inside and out, beats his man, plays it to Alexander Isak, and you have Van Dijk, arguably the best centre-back in world football, who's been imperious so far this season, had been terrorised by Isak during that first half. I mean, the way that Isak ran at the defence, the way that he had those sort of jelly legs where he didn't know quite where he was going to go, and he did a little trick here and there. He nutmegged Van Dijk at one stage, he put the ball in. So he basically sends Van Dijk the wrong way and then lashes a shot very early that Kelleher has no idea that it's coming that. And it's basically past him before he sees it.
Yeah.
On his slot afterwards, had to use a Dutch word to describe it, I think, because he basically said it was such a wonderful hit that he didn't have the actual English to be able to see how good a finish it was. And it was an absolutely brilliant.
What Dutch word did he use?
I mean, my Dutch is, I need to brush up on it a little bit, but,
the Dutch equivalent of thunder bastard. I think that's what it might have been.
Well, what was the Dutch word? I want to know what the Dutch word was.
Well, I don't know. You can look that up. But it was, I just think it was a brilliant goal. It was those players at their best. And Newcastle at their best showing what they can do. And that's why there is so much excitement around Alexander Isak, that there may be strikers who arguably are a bit more consistent at certain points, but I think there are very few. Even you look at Erling Haaland, and his goal score record might be phenomenal, but Alexander Isak can do things that other strikers can't
absolutely.
Do. He can score the goals, but he can do other things. And to have a player of Van Dijk's quality looking that terrified in the first half every time Isak got the ball, I think just spoke volumes.
It certainly does. And we also saw a flowing team move as well, started off by none other than Dan Byrne. An exquisite finish from Anthony Gordon as well, George. And another little hint of spikiness in the celebrations there, Gordon, suggesting maybe people should shut up.
I'm sorry, I was trying to look up Arnie.
I thought you might be.
Dutch
you seem slightly distracted.
He said, I'd just like to quote Steve McLaren. It was your special strike. Oh, no.
That was Sean Connery.
Yeah, I've gone full Connery. I meant to do McLaren, and I've gone Connery. Well, anyway, people.
You get the idea.
People can fill in their own punchline for that Steve McLaren joke. Yeah, what were you asking me? Sorry.
Anthony Gordon's goal. Lovely finish, great flow and move, and some interesting celebrations.
I'll talk about the move first.
Yeah, go on then.
That showed the value of, we're going to take the piss out of me later on for having written a piece which George told me I had to write about these two. But anyway, it showed the benefit of having two ball players in the pitch, because Byrne gets the ball out to Tonali on the right, who plays inside of Bruno Guimaraes. And there was a ploy during the match that Newcastle tried to get the ball to Isak.
Alexander Isak
early and as quickly as they possibly could. And then Bruno just turned and just put the ball to Isak, who'd come back onto an onside position. He'd been stood offside in between the two defenders. And at that point, you thought, this is basically a 2-on-2. You've got Gordon's pace and he picks the right pass. And then Gordon goes on the outside, sits Joe Gomez down completely, cuts inside on his right, and finishes across Keller. Keller gets a hand to it, but it's a good finish, and he manages to score the goal. And that was, Newcastle haven't reacted to having conceded the equaliser not long after the break, and you thought at that point, this could go south quite quickly. But instead, they responded and got that goal after Jones had equalised.
Yeah, and the celebration was a kind of like, yap, yap, yap. Talking sort of celebration, Gordon using his fingers to sort of do that sort of thing. And there has been a lot of talk, obviously, about that move that didn't happen to Liverpool in the summer. So there may have been a bit of that kind of going on, but also about the way Gordon has played this season. There's been criticism. There's been criticism of Newcastle's big players. And I personally think that criticism is justified or has been justified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gordon was excellent against Liverpool, you know, particularly leading from the front. And the big players were excellent. But, you know, what separates the good players from the great players is being able to do that week in, week out. And that, again, that is the challenge. But it's totally fair enough to respond like that when you've scored a goal in a match like that, when you played so well and loved it. But, yeah, got to do that week in, week out. Got to do that now at Brentford.
Absolutely. And Newcastle gave away another goal to Mo Salah, which we've mentioned already, but they go 3-2 behind. And then in the 90th minute, Fabian Scher pops up, a massive mistake by the goalkeeper, allowing him to get in round the back and slide the ball home from a really tight angle.
So I can talk through this goal.
You describe the goal, go on.
Well, Chris says that like the Isak goal is possibly his favourite goal of 2024. I wouldn't disagree in terms of the aesthetics of it. It was beautiful and, you know, that power, just, yeah, fabulous. But in some ways, that goal, the equalising goal for Newcastle last night, was beautiful in its own way because it was a team that was desperately, desperately trying to get back into that game. As the 90th minute is there, Newcastle win a free kick. I'm going to struggle now, aren't I, Chris?
Come on, you can do it.
Bruno loops a free kick over to the far post. And it is
an awful delivery, though. But it is actually a poor... That's the difference.
Yeah, it's a floated.
It's funny because the people are talking about set pieces, and actually Newcastle have scored from set pieces in each of these last two games.
Yeah.
One of them was an own goal, and the other one was... Yeah.
No, it was.
Keeper catches it, everyone goes, what a shit free kick that was.
Yeah, and of course the keeper should have caught. Now, it's a measure of the fact it wasn't a very good set piece that Kelleher tries to leave it. Well, does leave it. And it's a complete misjudgment. Now, afterwards, Fabian Scher says all he was trying to do was to keep the ball in play. But there he was at the far post, stretching in, using his wrong foot to keep the ball in. And not only does he do that, it nestles into the goal. But that is a masterpiece of just giving everything at the final moment, stretching, straining for everything. And so beautiful in a very different way. Would it have been a travesty if Newcastle hadn't got something out of that game? Yeah, I think it probably would. I mean, we haven't even said, I'm not sure we've said at the start, just what a great game of football it was.
Yeah, really good.
And we're so obsessed about whether Newcastle play well, play badly or indifferent. And it was just a brilliant game. I mean, yeah, I might feel differently about that if they hadn't got a draw. When Liverpool got to 3-2, I'll hold my hands up. I thought that was it. You know, you could feel that third goal coming. Suddenly Salah, who, as Chris said, I'd, you know, talked about being anonymous in the first half, suddenly he's cutting through the Newcastle team in only the way that he can. I mean, it's beautiful to watch, horrible as a Newcastle fan, but it's awe-inspiring. Suddenly he can kind of just go past people as if they're not there. And you could feel that moment happening. And to ask Newcastle to lift themselves again, to rouse themselves again, having led twice, having been pegged back twice, just really, really impressive. And so, yeah, beautiful in a very different way. But that equalising goal from Shah was gorgeous in its own special, different way.
It certainly was. George, you asked Eddie Howe if he was frustrated by the contrast in the performance when held up against the Palace and West Ham games. This is what he said.
Yes, and that's very much in my head because tonight we're everything that we want to be. We weren't perfect, but we're everything we want to be in terms of attitude, body language, demeanour, energy, pressing, attitude. I have to say, I don't think Palace was as bad as maybe the perception is of that game, because we were 1-0 up with seconds left, and if we win that game, I think there's a totally different view on it. So, but I understand that perception always changes with results. West Ham's last half an hour, I thought, was the low point for me. But yes, we need to hit the type of standards we did today consistently, and that is the challenge now for the players to deliver. But we have to find a solution together, you know, me included, coaching staff. We always move forward together, whatever the outcome. And we're always trying to find solutions because there's always issues and problems you have to solve. So we want to be the best team that we're capable of being. I think we're on our way towards that. I think from the start of the season to now, we've improved steadily. I hope that improvement continues as we go into a key month.
Now, I just think that is absolutely fascinating, right? Because whether we agree with him or not about Palace, and I think we probably disagree with him, when you're talking about the contrast between the two games, what we've been talking about is that stylistic thing. How can Newcastle get beyond a team who play a low block? Can they find a way to dominate other teams when they're being given to have the ball? And of course, you know, the Liverpool play in a very different way. So in some ways it suits Newcastle because Newcastle can hit them on the break. And what a Newcastle, they're a quick team. They're a pacey team. They can get the ball forward quickly. They're devastating when they get a chance to do that. But the thing that Howe references isn't the contrast in quality. When I'm talking about, you know, talking about inconsistency, he doesn't talk about the contrast in quality. He doesn't talk about the contrast in attacking play. He doesn't talk about skill, any of those things. The things he references, attitude, demeanour, body language.
He mentioned attitude twice, which I found quite enjoyable.
Yeah. I mean, like me. But I think that's fascinating. So what he's saying there is the difference, the inconsistency is about attitude. Now those things are absolute basics for a football team. They're the fundamentals for a football team. And so what he's saying is that Newcastle's players approached West Ham Palace with a different mentality than they approached Liverpool. Now, part of that is, that's understandable. Of course you raise your game against, you know, the best team, the best players, but you know, one of the things that Newcastle were desperately trying to do last season when they brought in a new head of psychology was to treat every single game the same. And, you know, they have been more successful at this in the past than they have been this season. And like when you approach a game and think you should win it, you know, talked about West Ham before, it's a one-way ticket to disaster that, you know, for us as fans, I hate that feeling that we have. And again, you contrast that to Liverpool when everybody's up for it. The players are up for it. Fans are up for it. Everyone's up for it. And how powerful Newcastle were. The greatest teams, you know, in the Premier League. I know it's been a bad season so far by their own standards for Manchester City, but their brilliance is being able to take on West Ham and play in the same way with the same hunger, the same drive that they play against Real Madrid. And again, you look at individual players, whether we're talking about Anthony Gordon or Bruno or Isak. You've got to do it week in, week out. Alan Shearer was a complete centre forward. He's the best centre forward that I've seen in my lifetime, particularly play for Newcastle. But what separated him from a player like Isak was that he wanted to score absolutely every single week, and he wouldn't be happy unless he had. That's why he's the Premier League's record goal scorer. That's why he's Newcastle United's record goal scorer, because he had that drive week in, week out to play like that. Now, not everybody can have that mentality. Totally understand that. Totally get that. Everyone's different. But I think there's been a significant drop off in some games this season in terms of that attitude and demeanour. It's not saying Newcastle are bad lads. They've got bad eggs. It's not that. But they can't believe their own publicity. You've just got to show those fundamentals week in, week out. And I know I've gone on a bit there, but I do think it's really interesting and I do think it's really important. However West Ham played in that match a couple of weeks ago, if Newcastle had turned up with the attitude they showed against Liverpool, they wouldn't have lost. Fact.
Well, I just wanted to briefly pick up on, we've mentioned Newcastle's issues against low blocks this season, and I just wanted to pick up on something that we talked about additionally in our piece, which is possession-wise. Now, Newcastle, in their home games so far this season, the three games they've had the lowest possession share in, Southampton, Spurs and Arsenal, they've won. The next two matches where they've had less than 50% possession against Manchester City, the four times in a row champions, and against Liverpool, the top of the table side, runaway leaders, they've drawn. And the two matches where they've had more of the ball, Brighton 60% and West Ham 53%, they've lost the ball. Now, and they've only of all the games home and away all season, the only two matches they've won with more possession, one was away at Spurs when Wolves when they had 51.5% possession, so only a little bit more. And for most of the game, they weren't great. They had two goals late on to turn that match around. And the other one was at Forest, but actually, for most of the first half, Newcastle had even more possession and didn't do that much with it, and their best moves were in transition as well. So that sort of shows where Newcastle's strengths are and where their difficulties are going forward. It is something that's being talked about inside the club. How do we address this against sides who sit off? How do we have this different approach rather than it just be transitional? Because that's quite clearly where Newcastle are strongest.
There were a few controversial decisions in the game, George, and a few moments that are worth mentioning. Should Alexander Isak have had a penalty? He went down right on the edge of the box after a challenge from Gerald Kwanzaa. Interesting on this. It's really hard to see in real time, but when you look at the replay, it does look like Kwanzaa got a slight toe on the ball, so I can kind of see why it wasn't overturned.
Yeah. Edward Winston Howe did say that he thought that was a penalty, and I thought with all those decisions in this game, they possibly didn't hit the bar of clear and obvious.
Yeah.
You know, the other one is Virgil van Dijk. Gordon's gone through, should have scored, doesn't, goes down, gets up, and Virgil van Dijk then barges into him. And it looks deliberate, you know, with that shoulder.
I mean, he has to move the way he's running to get to Gordon. It's so unnecessarily needless.
But
it doesn't cross the line of being
whether that's violent
dangerous
conduct.
Or violent conduct. I don't know. Whether it being shoulder to head or whatever, I don't know. It's a strange one.
What I would say about this is like sort of ducking it as sort of individual talking points. The thing I liked about last night was that there were those incidents. We weren't sitting around waiting for hours for VAR to do its stuff. It was fast. It was furious. And in fact, that sort of sense of, that sense of sort of annoyance and irritation fed the crowd and was part of what made it a great atmosphere. So in some ways, I'm pleased that there weren't these sort of huge delays while we looked at all those things. It was part of what made it such a kind of great occasion. I think marginally, you could say that Newcastle were on the wrong end of those decisions, but it ultimately, I don't think it sort of mattered too much because I think it added to the occasion. I think it added to the fury of Newcastle's performance.
And Chris, Newcastle were on the attack, ostensibly a 3-on-1 when the final whistle was blown by the referee. Go on then. What were you going to say? Because I can see you going.
I think the 3-on-1's a bit of a misnomer. The reason why it's a 3-on-1 is because all the Liverpool players stopped because they know it would have been a 3-on-3, I think, if the Liverpool players hadn't stopped. But the Liverpool players have already stopped because it was a bit odd actually in the stadium because the referee put the whistle to his mouth and then it was unclear whether he had actually blown the whistle. Nobody seemed to know exactly what was going on. Now, not so much the referee blowing the whistle at that point. I think more of the issue for me is that I agree with Eddie Howe. There should have been more time added on than
there was.
There
was a free kick that took a while, wasn't it?
The free kick took a while. There'd been a VAR check. So that was rather than the actual stuff, because people are going, oh, Newcastle had a 3-on-1. I don't think it actually did play out quite like that. They were on the attack. They weren't the count. I think it was more just the time should have been added on and he should have added. That's why he shouldn't have blown, rather than the actual outcome in the match situation. If it was the time was up, then it shouldn't have mattered if it was a 3-on-1. They were in the middle of the pitch when he blew the whistle. It wasn't. It's just the play looked like it had actually gone on a bit further because Newcastle kept playing and Liverpool essentially stopped.
Nick Pope got himself booked over that as well, didn't he?
He did.
Flying out of his goal to remonstrate with the ref after the final whistle had gone. Yeah.
Well, it was his. which started the move, because his distribution thrown out was actually very good all game and it started quite a few attacks. That was another clear thing Newcastle had identified.
Yes, and now here is a statement. Christopher Wolf is an idiot and thinks Bruno and Tonali can't play together. George, this performance would suggest don't you even dare thinking about jumping in, Chris Wolf. Let George say what he has to say here.
No, I'll do the mea culpa, Chris. I really will do. So, yes, I wrote that. I wrote that statement, idiot Chris. The reason why that is hilarious is because it's an in-joke and I suggested Chris wrote that piece. But the reason I suggested that it was a kind of interesting piece was you have to go back. You go back to Newcastle losing at Chelsea in the Premier League, and for a game which felt massive in terms of mood, in terms of the noise around the club and the team. When it came to the follow-up match, which was the League Cup game at home to Chelsea, Howe took out Bruno from the team, played Tonali. Tonali was excellent in that game. That's my memory. He was very, very good. And then for the game afterwards, you're thinking, does he stick with that lineup? Has he found a way forward? And what he did was take Tonali out and put Bruno into the midfield. And it was the same midfield that then played against Forest in that fine win. Now, so, you know, that was interesting emotionally. There'd been the sort of little rumblings of discontent when Tonali had been subbed off and Sean Longstaff had come on. Those little things had been booed. And so it felt like a big decision, you know, in that kind of emotional sense to take him out of the team. But it also was that sort of story about what you sometimes need to do to find a way, to find a result. So I just thought that was like a fascinating moment that in that huge week, Newcastle had found a way to get wins and to play better without this guy who they've signed their absolute, you know, probably their first real elite signing in terms of taking an established player from an established club who's a full international, you know, going to AC Milan, bringing him for a big fee and taking that decision. And so there are lessons there too about team building. But the caveat I would give to it is that when you've got a player that special, that good, you have to find a way to make it work. And the pleasing thing, you know, certainly signs in the Palace game, Tonali was, I mean, you can't say anybody was excellent, but there were obviously signs of uplift in terms of his performance. And the two of them did dovetail really well together against Liverpool. But we have to go back to the start of the season when they were playing and leaving, you know, that midfield was leaving gaps all over the place. So I hope I've given Chris a bit of context there and a bit of fairness. I think it's just it's just fascinating what you sometimes have to do to get results, to build.
And actually, this is Tonali moving to the number six position and Bruno Guimarães out to the number eight position. So that is a tweak there. Also, not to piss on anyone's chips, but they still actually haven't won a game when they've started together in the Premier League since the start of last season, because then Newcastle didn't actually beat Liverpool. So there is still that caveat, although I think the midfield blend did look better. I'm still not convinced longer term that Bruno Guimarães is a number eight, but equally that it did work very well. And he was excellent at getting two assists. And then Sandro Tonali was magnificent just playing those short passes in midfield. So fingers crossed this is the start of a formula going forward.
Full names for both. Full names for both. Well done.
Excellent work. Tonali's had a good week, to be fair to him. He's starting to show little flashes of that quality that we know he's got, isn't he? Is it possible, George, that this game can get the train rolling like the 3-3 against Manchester City did in the Champions League qualification year? Newcastle need that little bump, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, again, that is the hope, but we have been there a few times already this season. The draw against Man City at home, I know they then beat Wimbledon in the cup, but that wasn't the turning point we hoped it would be. Yeah, the games against Chelsea, Arsenal, Forest, that wasn't the turning point we hoped it would be. So, you know, is this the real Newcastle? Can they keep it going forward? We know that they're a really good team. I'll just, talking about that sort of attitude and commitment point, Chris and I bumped into a player who I won't name, but as we left the stadium last night and we just had a very brief chat. And, you know, it's not just Howe saying these things. He said, yeah, that was a great game. Good fun. Brilliant. We've got to just keep this consistent. We've got to find this consistency and we've got to show that attitude every week. And so they're talking about it within the team. You know, they recognize that fact. You can forgive players and teams having off days. It happens. It happens to everybody. It happens to the best teams. But you can't forgive them really dropping off in terms of those basics. And I'll say it again. If Newcastle had played with the same attitude and commitment and determination and body language and all of those things against West Ham, they wouldn't have lost that game. You can struggle to break down teams, and that's fine. I get that. Newcastle's style has to evolve. But if they'd, West Ham are dog shit. They're a bad team going through a terrible run of form. And Newcastle let them play. Newcastle let them come into that game. That shouldn't have happened. So, yeah, I hope that is the turning point. And there's not a big turnaround before the Brentford game. We know that. I'm sure those are the messages that Howe is giving to the players. Play like that. Yeah. Play like that.
Okay, let's have a quick break and we'll come back and quickly chat about Brentford before we wrap things up. So the momentum gathering requires at least a point and a good performance at the GTEC Community Stadium. We'd probably want a win though, Chris, wouldn't we? They're above us on goal difference and we're well beaten by deeply out of form Aston Villa on Wednesday night. You'd like to think Newcastle could get something at Brentford.
Yeah, although Brentford have the best home record in the Premier League this season. They've won 6 and drawn 1. They haven't lost. They have conceded at least 1 in all of those matches though. But Newcastle go there with an excellent record. They've won, I think, at least the last 3 Premier League trips there. So, I also think that the style of the match may suit them in terms of Brentford will attack, and that should allow Newcastle, rather than against a low block, I think it'll be a fairly high scoring game, put it that way.
I do think that's interesting. They've scored 22 goals at home. That's far more than anybody else.
Yeah.
They've also conceded 12. And I think only West Ham, Wolves, Southampton have conceded more at home. So that shows the kind of team they are. I agree with Chris. I think there's an opportunity there for Newcastle. Mustn't take it for granted. Mustn't turn up, as they did at Palace, as they did against West Ham at home. I think if they have that sort of rigorousness, they'll get chances. And so they've got to, this time they've got to take them.
Quite a nice dress rehearsal as well, Chris, for probably our biggest game of the season so far, that Carabao Cup quarter final.
Yeah, Newcastle lost to Brentford at Brentford at the same stage of the competition under Steve Bruce during lockdown. But this is a huge opportunity. It feels massive. That is really big for momentum. So that comes in a week and a half after this match. So yeah, it is a bit of a dress rehearsal, albeit an away match rather than a home one.
While we're on the Cups, George, Bromley at St James's Park in January in the FA Cup. Quite the draw, that. We wanted a home draw.
Yeah, suddenly it's no longer this hopeless cup draw. It's a good draw for Newcastle, of course. It's at home. Features Andy Woodman, the former Newcastle goalkeeping coach, as their manager. They've done pretty well. But yeah, it's a very inviting cup draw. And I've run out of words.
Nice. Okay, I think we've nearly all run out of words now. We've nearly worded ourselves to death. We've got to say good luck to the lasses as well, who host Middlesbrough in the Women's FA Cup this weekend also. Right, our friend as well, travelling from Newcastle to Newcastle without any planes at all, has been in touch again. And by a weird twist of fate, he's called Curtis Jones.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we doing? I was listening to the pod the other day, and I can see now why saying that I'm going from the UK to Australia without taking any flights. And then giving no context raises a lot more questions than it answers. Sadly, much like Newcastle United, I think my answers might be sometimes confusing and sometimes a bit lackluster, but here we go. In terms of why, I'd love to say I'm a big ego warrior or a big environmentalist or something, but nah, it's none of that. Basically, I was going to go to Australia anyway. I was planning on doing some travel in Europe and some travel in Asia, and I thought if I do that bit in the middle, I can link it all up and make it into something. In terms of charity, I'd love to raise a bit of money for somewhere. I looked a bit into the Sir Bobby Robson Foundation after hearing about it on the pod. Love the stuff they're doing there. So it'd be great to earn a bit of cash for them towards the end. But I'm waiting to get past some of the bigger hurdles before I start thinking about that. How I'm doing it? Basically anything but a plane. At the moment, it's been mostly buses and trains all through Eastern Europe and Central Europe. But further down the line, I'm expecting it to get a bit harder going. I don't think, Kazakhstan has a great bus network, so I might be looking at renting bikes or something when I get there. But I've not really thought it all out yet, as you can probably tell. And then there'll be a big boat on the other side. So hopefully that answers some of your questions. Love what you boys are doing on the pod. Keep up all the sausage-related antics, and I appreciate the well wishes. Cheers, lads.
Lovely stuff, Curtis. Thank you very much.
Oh, amazing.
And good luck with that trek. That is a trek and a half, isn't it? And speaking of big trips, Chris Woff, you have a big trip planned as well, don't you? You're heading south, my boy.
Oh, I am. I am indeed. But whether I survive or not, we will find out on next week's pod, I suppose.
We shall find out.
This could be my last appearance. Who knows?
Yeah. We might have lost him to the south, George.
You're going to London, aren't you? London's fashionable London district.
Frightening prospect.
The big smoke, Chris, eh?
Sort of like a modern day, a latter day. Can I say that?
Good Lord.
No, okay, I can't say that.
Yeah. I envisage Chris almost like a Paddington Bear kind of character turning up in London with his sausage sandwiches in his pocket and his little hat on and his little duffel coat, bless him.
With his, what is it, with a label on his coat saying, yeah, feed me meat or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Can I borrow one of your many coats, George?
Yes, if you wish, yeah.
We've come full circle with the discussion. There we go. It's beautifully, how you tie it up. Perfect.
Yeah.
Right then, another quick email before we go. Thank you, as always, for the lighthearted take on the serious business of following Newcastle United. Any thoughts on chasing Evan Ferguson, if available for a loan move in January, please? Thank you, and best wishes, Alan. Chris, let's go to you for this. Evan Ferguson, good player.
He is a good player. He's had a difficult year. The thing I would say about it is I don't really see how it would benefit Brighton to loan him to Newcastle, both in terms of a direct rival and unless Alexander Isak and Callum Wilson are both injured, he's unlikely to play regularly. So I don't think that probably suits him either. So I'd say it's unlikely, although as a player, I'm sure Newcastle, well, he has been tracked by Newcastle as he has by a lot of other clubs. So going forward, possibly, but I doubt a loan in January.
Well, there we go. And obviously with the January transfer window on the horizon, there'll be more transfer chats soon from us, I'm sure. Thank you to all of our correspondents. Of course, get in touch with us on Blue Sky at podonthetyne.bsky.social and at podonthetyne on Twitter or X as well. Emails and voice notes always welcome, of course. And the address is podonthetyne@theathletic.com. Right. Thank you very much, chaps. Thank you for your time, Chris.
You're very welcome, Taylor Payne, and George Colgan.
Good stuff. And thank you very much, George Colgan, as well, for your time.
Yeah, can't wait to be chatting next week about Brentford 4, Newcastle United.
Come on now. Come on. Let's finish on a high. Come on.
Well, I am finishing on a high because
You try and jinx it so that it would actually be a positive
result. No, but we just don't know, do we? We just don't know what Newcastle's going to turn up. I mean, in some ways that's the beauty of football, but it's such a frustration this season. It wouldn't surprise you if he did that.
Listen, it's going to be fine. We've got our best man on the case. Chris Woff is going there. He is going to make sure everything's all right. Newcastle will come away with 3 points. Nothing more to add. Okay.
Well, I was going to try and do the latter-day version of... I was going to do trying to see if I could get away with it by being slightly less rude than the first time.
No,
I said it,
I don't think you can. Right, then, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. From everybody at Pod on the Time, we hope you have a good week. I'll speak to you on the other side. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Study Salah, Son, Mane, everyone, you name it. I've studied, tried to take little bits from their game. Probably haven't implemented it very well.
Try.
But yeah, I try.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.